Our media doesn't just do a poor job of telling us what's happening. They do no job of telling us what is happening.
They now have to keep printing or we crash.
We've got this ticking time bomb.
Talking gold with the one and only Andrew McGuire.
Welcome to Live from the Vault.
Welcome to Live from the Vault. I'm Craig Hemke. I'm sitting in this week for Shane Moran. Shane's a little under the weather, and so I am pinch hitting. In your guest segment this week, Andrew McGuire welcomes Andy Scheckman. Andy's an old friend, just like Andrew McGuire is. Andy is the head of Miles Franklin, which is a big online bullion dealer here in the States. So if anybody knows what's going on in the physical market, it's going to be Andy Scheckman. This is a great discussion between Andrew McGuire and Andy Scheckman, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it.
Well, Andy, thank you very, very much. This is a real treat for us. I've met you personally. I missed you in London this time, but I've met you personally. And of course, it is a real buzz to have you on. We've been here before. We've had so many requests for you. And I know that you're on the circuit. Everyone wants Andy. Everyone wants a piece of Andy right now. And not surprisingly. So thank you for coming and joining us today.
You kidding me, man? The honor is mine. And, you know, there's nary a piece that you issue that I don't watch immediately as it comes out. So it's, I've been following you for a very, very long time. And, you know, they've been writing about you in GATA for a very long time. And I think anyone who owns precious metals, as a side note, should, you know, we owe a debt of gratitude to Bill Murphy and Chris Powell, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. That's where I first heard about you way back when, and because they've been fighting a fight that we continue to carry the torch on. But I appreciate the kind words, and truly the honor is mine to be here and glad to do so.
Yeah, and you've just named two of my heroes right there. And absolutely, we owe a great debt of gratitude to them both. And do you know what really pleased me is that the last time I spoke to Bill, he was so angry about the silver price, and quite right too. And I think he must be getting a little bit happier. What do you think?
I hope so. I mean, you know, first of all, the guy's tough. You know, if you've ever met him in person, he's not a big guy at all. And he played, you know, receiver in the NFL for the Patriots when they were the Boston Patriots, I believe. And he's tough physically and mentally. But when you fight a fight, as long as all of us have, it can make you angry. The counterintuitive nature of, you know, ask yourself, why would four or five commercial banks have the short positions, most of them naked in gold and silver, the way that they do, which creates distortions in reality and creates a narrative that, you know, gold and silver are just barbaric relics of the past when we know otherwise. And Bill and Chris know otherwise. And they have stood up not only to the counterintuitive nature, but to the naysayers and to the manipulation and all of the things that, you know, I can understand why Bill gets the way he does or feels the way he does. But yeah, I think he's beginning to feel vindicated, and he's been right. You know, how many people would have thought gold would hit $2,400 when he was writing and it was languishing at $400 and $500? And the same thing will be true about silver when it finally makes its move. And there's so many fundamentals that are growing by the day that you talk about all the time, and I try to talk about that will make that happen. But the one thing that I've learned along the way, you know, is that the fundamentals that we see, the logic, if you will, sometimes has an inverse correlation with outcome, at least in terms of when we think it will. But in the end, when you base your conclusions upon mathematics and economics with a sprinkling of old school logic upon it, typically these things pan out, and we're beginning to see some of that right now.
Yeah, and again, talk about being proved right. And I mean, way back when, it was people used to talk about tinfoil hats, and you know, of course, we had all the apologists saying manipulation. Of course, how could it be possible that there would be this kind of level of manipulation? You guys are crazy. And then, I mean, we fast forward to just a year and a half, a couple of years ago. And what did the DOJ call JP Morgan's bank? They said
criminal
it
enterprise.
Was a criminal enterprise.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, forget about the fact that they paid a $920 million fine and that Michael Nowak, their head gold trader, is in jail. And they're still allowed. I think they should still be allowed to run the world's largest silver trust as they are. And, yeah, I mean, there's so many things that just don't make sense. And it's, you know, quite frankly, if it weren't up to guys like Bill and Chris to have opened my eyes to all of this way back when, I may not have seen it either. Because our media doesn't just do a poor job of telling us what's happening. They do no job of telling us what is happening. And, you know, as a side note, and I never told you this, but while we're here sharing this, I remember going to New York City to have a meeting with at the time, it was Prudential. Prudential Life Insurance Company was actually one of the primary distributors to the U.S. Mint, and they nominated Miles Franklin at the time, this was 15 years ago, as being a authorized reseller. And there was only 24, 5, 6 companies that have ever been nominated then. It was a wonderful meeting. And we went and met with another guy who my father knew. He was an analyst, and it was right about the time that Gatto wrote about you and wrote about you in the respect that there was a car accident with you and your wife. And we were talking to this trader, and he says, I know all of the guys at, I don't know if it was Goldman or wherever it was. And they said, there is no Andrew Maguire. He doesn't exist. So, you know, all along I've been having to deal with, whether it be people naysaying about the reasons to own precious metals, or even the people that we're hearing from. You know, before I ever met you, before I ever spoke with you. And this is the reason why so few people will understand what will, most of the people can't see what's coming at them and therefore won't be able to get out of the way of what's coming, because on every single level, we have had to fight this battle. And it's now, maybe just now, for the first time in my career, where not only guys like you and I are getting our due recognition for sounding the alarm, but I think you're beginning to see an awakening, a little bit of an awakening by, you know, by at least by the establishment, that gold and silver can't be ignored. Now, when you look at the public, on the other hand, the lack of participation by the public, even in the face of gold and silver going ballistic the way they have been, is shocking to me. But I thought you might find it interesting. This is a Wall Street guy who was saying, no, there is no Andrew Maguire and he doesn't exist. And I know all the people. Did you work at Goldman Sachs? Is that where it was?
No. I spent I had 2 weeks in London. I hated it. My father got me in there, ex-military, ex-ASAS. And he said, come on, go and join these guys. Well, I'll tell you what, I spent 2 weeks there and I went hightailing it right back out again. So I didn't want to be infected by those guys at all.
Well, it just goes to show that I've been following you for almost 20 years. And so, like I said at the onset, the honor is certainly mine to be here with you. And you're one of the good guys. So, you know, let's break it down, because there's so much going on, Andrew. I don't even know where to begin with you.
Well, look, let's start with what we both passionately love is silver, because it is, as you say, you've just brought it up, and it is exciting, because if anything's ever going to be a rocket ship, my God, it's got to be silver. And I think what the reason I want to bring it up really is kind of one of the earliest things to talk about is that now, from this side of the pond, we were, and this was right just as India started coming in heavily to buy, and we were being called by Heraeus, Valcambi, European refinery, saying, can you get us any silver? And I said, are you crazy? I'm coming to you usually. What are you talking about? And they said, no, we have I could fill 2,000 tons of of Indian orders right now at spot, as long as it's a spot. And India never pays spot. I mean, they pay below spot. So the fact they're paying in the spot, 2,000 tons of orders that they could fill right there and then, and it started to grow. In the meantime, I'm speaking to Rob Keynes and other people. They're saying, well, retail silver's just in the pan. In the pan. It's like people are coming to Rob Keynes, and maybe it's for the reasons they just needed the money, but they were selling their silver at the lowest possible prices. What kind of, I mean, it takes, I think this is why these shows are so important, and these episodes for that you do and we do and that we all do, is to draw attention to the fact, hang on, this is not one narrative. There's something else going on here. Andy, what were you seeing when silver retail premiums were low and we couldn't get any wholesale silver?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's really unusual that we see, first of all, you, India, right? 400 million ounces of silver they imported over the last 2 years, which ironically is pretty darn close to the amount. I'm not saying it's one-to-one, but for many, the 400 million ounces almost drained off of COMEX. I'm not saying it's one-to-one. In the last 2 years, that's about what India has imported. But their numbers in February alone are up 260% in imports. Last year, they imported 3,625 tons for the entire year. They're already up to 2,300 tons in just the first 2 months of the year. And so this is, again, being completely ignored by the mainstream. And when we talk about gold and silver, in particular, silver rising the way that it has, you know, 10% up a week ago and with great volatility, mind you, but continuing to surge higher was, you know, it was $18 not too long ago, it was $20 not too long ago. And here we are right now at almost 29. This has happened and Rob's a buddy of mine, and certainly I think when you have a shop like he does where the public comes in, no one would have a better understanding of this, that the public has been selling into this rally. Maybe it is due to capitulation. Maybe it is due to the fact that people just need money, the cost of living going higher. I'm not quite sure. The disbelief that it will continue to rally, I am not sure. You look at the ETF participation, I don't know, 8 billion ounces or dollars rather, $8 billion worth have been sold out of the ETFs in this rally, and it continues to move higher. And, you know, which is really interesting. And I mentioned that to my buddy, Bill Holter, and he says, well, you know, to me, that's the ETFs, that's the share redemption. They're coming in and taking the physical possession. A lot of it is of share redemption that is not as easily noticed as if it were delivered off of COMEX. And he may be right, that has a portion of it. But the moral of the story is that in the face of rising real rates, if we believe the CP lie, right, where you're getting 5.5% on a 6-month treasury, in the face of a very strong dollar, in the face of these things, as the public is, you know, really, if you look at the Gold Eagle sales, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny amount compared to where it's been. And I mentioned gold. To me, gold and silver are the same thing in terms of demand. But if you look at the ETFs that have really been bled down as people have been focused more on NVIDIA and Bitcoin and things that, you know, making them lots and lots of money, this rally has gone completely unnoticed by the West. In fact, selling into this rally, and yet it continues to move higher. I find it to be amazing. And then when you realize that the current president in Mexico, who appears to be on the way out, has an initiative in place to change the constitution. I mean, they're the largest producer of silver in the world, maybe only second to Peru, to completely ban and change the constitution to ban open pit mining. And the successor, a woman who's ahead in the polls, who looks like she'll win, she's all for that ban. So you're talking about taking tremendous amount of silver offline in an environment where we've experienced a structural deficit in supply demand over the last 2 years. And countries like India, understanding, and it's very much similar to this growing group of industry insiders and analysts that are petitioning the Canadian government to change silver from from an industrial metal to a critical metal, to one that is needed in so many things, not just in green and digital applications, but in just about everything, including military. And I find it also very interesting. And, you know, this is something that I don't think gets enough attention, is the military application. Now, I gave a speech at Jay Martin's conference in Vancouver, the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference. And I think everyone should check that out. It's a great conference. He does it every year up in Vancouver. But I did 2 years ago, and I mentioned that I always believed there was 500 ounces of silver in a Tomahawk cruise missile. And if you Google it, it will pop up. And I met a gentleman there. In fact, he gave me this cup. He works for the Department of Defense, and he said that he had actually worked on the Patriot missile program. Well, he was up there this year. I gave a different speech this year, but he came up to me in the audience and he said, the things I'm going to tell you are declassified, so don't worry. But I worked on the Patriot missile program. And I got to tell you, you're right. There is nearly 500 ounces of silver in the tip of a Tomahawk cruise missile. And so I find it interesting that the Silver Institute, who I always thought put out really accurate or good information anyway, they omit this. There is no designation for military or aerospace. And when you look at the amount of wars that are being fought, when you look at the amount of munitions that are being made and sold to other countries, whether or not we're using them or not, it becomes very compelling and interesting to wonder, why would a handful of banks be short the level that they are, naked short, to such a degree, maybe the largest concentrated short position on any commodity ever traded on COMEX, why on silver? And maybe when you take a step back and realize there's a very fine line between conspiracy and reality, maybe indeed it has to do with the never-ending wars that the military-industrial complex seems to be waging and or funding. And ask yourself, you know, does it make sense, or is it as dumb as a mud wall to be naked short in a commodity like silver in a monetary environment we have right now in countries like India, buying everything that's not nailed down? And the last thing, and I'll get your comment, is there's rumors all over the internet right now, and people that I talk to who have relationships in China, that the Chinese government is now urging their populace to focus more on silver than on gold, to accumulate silver. As you know, Alistair MacLeod would say, they have 38,000 metric tons of gold, 18,000 owned by the people and 20 by the state. Now they're saying, look, silver is the place to be, not only from a value standpoint, but maybe it's the Achilles heel of the West. So, you know, I don't know, but I guess I would simply say that to me, silver is the most undervalued, underappreciated asset, and maybe the asset value of a generation. And I don't say that lightly. I don't know if I've ever seen anything that has better supply demand fundamentals and asymmetrical risk reward portfolio asymmetrical risk reward, asymmetrical risk reward background. I mean, you look at it, the downside is virtually nothing. The upside is extraordinary. And
yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the suppression and the manipulation, which has created all of these distortions.
And this is, Andy, this is a classic case of pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. This cartel, you must have seen that about a year or so ago, the so-called professional trade, LBMA professional, issued this whole video, and it was a whole presentation about the capricious metal. I mean, as if it's fickle. I mean, yeah, really fickle? Only because you've been controlling it as fickle. But the thing is that what was interesting is this is a perfect example. These guys, as you say, have had massive derivative positions in place. Massive. They're buried under these derivative positions because they thought they had control of this market, full control. Then a little thing happens, like the physical markets start to get settled outside of the CME LBMA ring fence. Hang on a minute. Hold on. What's going on? You mean it's getting settled elsewhere? Yes, it's getting settled elsewhere. So suddenly, what happens to your derivative positions? You've got a problem, a serious problem. So what do? Stupid. They double down. They double down. They think, we've created this narrative, and they look to the US primarily because You can't say it to an Indian. You can't say it to a Chinese person. You cannot say it to most people in Europe, even who have gold accumulation accounts directly from their businesses, from their employer. Silver is a component of that. And you are dead right. China is encouraging silver purchases. So now you've got, and also the Indian market, they look at gold. You know, they're very savvy guys. They go, hang on, that's a bit high for me, gold. Let me switch horses to silver. And then you've got this massive green program there that where in March of this year, a lot of the companies were told, you need to conform to this. So you need a hell of a lot of silver, which sort of coincided with this sudden shortage of 2,000 tons odd. And so these pigs, I mean, you know, they've literally, what they've done is shoot themselves in the foot because they no longer have control. And I think what we're seeing here is an opportunity. The risk reward here is not a downside anymore. It's broken out. And I don't know. To me, 26,225 was the level I figured that's the last line in the sand. I don't know where you thought it was, around that level perhaps, but it's not coming back there. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I think the reason that this is happening is, you know, and I've, a lot of the things that I've been talking about, you might be the only other person that I know of that was talking about these types of things 3-4 years ago, about the BRICS and the Belt Road and all of the tier one asset. I mean, I learned a lot of that from you, the revision of gold and the way the BIS revised it in terms of its tier one riskless portfolio or asset that, you know, other than U.S. treasuries and dollars and how profound that really has been. And if you follow this progression of events, you know, my mentor, Andy, was a man named Richard Russell. I'm sure you remember him. And he, brilliant man. And he said the Fed was trapped way back when, 20 years ago, he was saying they can inflate or they can default. And now I've been saying for the last year or so that this, it seems too stupid to be stupid. The things that they're doing, almost as if it's intended. And you look at an executive order to go green. Well, that's stupid considering the linchpin of the hegemony is the petrodollar and the backing of the Saudi kingdom. The fact that Saudi Arabia signed an executive order with Russia, the fact that, a military protection agreement with Russia, the fact that Saudi Arabia has joined the BRICS, has joined the Belt Road along with all of the other OPEC countries, the fact that they've joined the New Development Bank and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the fact that, you know, and again, all OPEC countries on the Belt Road, the fact that they have told the folks in Davos they're open to taking other currencies for oil, all of these things you could argue we have fostered by signing an executive order to go green, by weaponizing the dollar is a big one. And all of these countries, I believe, have crossed the bridge of, you know, we don't want to hold treasuries anymore, because not only if you look at what gold has done over the past 25 years since the turn of the century, it's massively outperformed not only the S&P, you know, which is average about 7-8% per year, and gold over 9, but massively outperformed the bond market. But the real reason, it's not the performance, it's the fact that it can't be sanctioned, it can't be defaulted upon, and you don't have that default risk, that sanction risk that you do, where you have our brain dead Treasury Secretary going into Brazil a few weeks ago, into the backyard of Russia, a member of BRICS, and saying, well, you know, publicly, in a conference in Brazil, we need to not just confiscate or sanction the 380 billion forex reserves, we need to confiscate them and use them to fund the Ukrainian effort. And now she just said it again 3 days ago in an interview on CNBC that says that, you know, this is from the too stupid to be stupid category, that, you know, the U.S. is ready to sanction Chinese banks if they aid the Russian war machine. And she says it's prepared to sanction the banks and companies as well as Beijing leadership if they aid in Russia's military invasion of Ukraine. So we can aid the Ukraine, but you can't aid your ally, your BRICS ally. If you do, we're going to sanction you. And now she's talking about sanctioning Iran again. And, you know, we're a broke, hypocritical nation. And And then you look at what we've allowed to happen inside our borders, which I keep saying, if we just were as stupid as we were internationally by signing executive order to go green, by allowing our allies like United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia to turn sides and to join a group that finds safety in numbers with three of the four largest nuclear arsenals on the planet, a much larger percentage of global GDP and human population and oil and gas production and rare earth metal production and even larger swath of soft commodities like wheat. And we allowed China to buy, you know, without... We've watched and stood by as we've seen China buy the LME, and now they want to warehouse all of the LME metals, the London Metals Exchange, which is copper and steel and the base metals. They're going to warehouse them in China, even though they're traded in London. All of these things are happening at the same time. And you look at what Janet Yellen says, and she says, you know, that we stand ready to act if we see significant violations, especially by financial institutions. But the worst, most embarrassing part about it is she says China is entitled to have a relationship with Russia. Well, thank you very much, Janet. And she says that, noting that much of the trade between the two countries is seen by the U.S. as non-problematic. Well, that's fantastic. But the provision of military aid from Beijing to Moscow will trigger sanctions. And you look at that, and I don't know about you, but to me, I find it embarrassing. I mean, it's so hypocritical that it's actually embarrassing. And, you know, I think this is why you're seeing these countries say, you know, the hell with treasuries, which has a tiny little footprint in terms of historical significance as being an asset. Mm-hmm. The hell with them. We will buy something that not only has outperformed it, but can't be sanctioned. And let them try to manipulate it. Because, Andrew, I think the only way you can manipulate a market over an extended period of time is to push it in the direction that it is going. But when you see China and India and all of these countries buying whatever is not nailed down, and now China raising the price of silver and gold in Shanghai, you know, as much as $3 an ounce in silver to attract the arbitrage trade, you can see that this is something they think in terms of a much longer time frame than we do. And if you'll humor me, I want to read one other thing, because to me, everything that we've talked about this subject over the past couple of years is encapsulated in one sentence or one paragraph, and then in a couple paragraphs that I'd like to read to you real quick.
Please,
the first one that I want to read is by the chairman of the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and he said this in 2014, okay? On May 15, 2014, the chairman of the Shanghai Gold Exchange said, "The Shanghai Gold Exchange will change the current gold market with its consumed in the East but priced in the West arrangement. And when China finally has the right to speak in the international gold market, the true price of gold will be revealed." All right, that's number one. Now, the only other thing I want to say, and I'll get your point or your comments on it, as to why this is all happening, right? Why is gold going higher as the public is not involved with positive real returns, with a strong dollar, you know, with all of this stuff that is supposed to be horrible for gold, 5.5% interest on a short-term treasury, that should kill gold, right? No, because listen to this. And I think this is probably one of the most telling things I've ever heard come out of this BRICS formation. Now, I have been saying for a very long time, because Sergei Glazyev has said that the new BRICS settlement currency, whenever it's issued, and forget about the fact that it wasn't issued in August. I mean, what they're doing right now by trading in local currencies and settling in gold is just as damaging to the settlement status of the dollar and to the reserve status, because a settlement is done in local currencies where Brazil will sell corn to China for yuan, and then they can convert that yuan into gold on the Shanghai Gold Exchange and using gold to replace the excess reserves that would normally go into treasuries. That chips away at the reserve status of the dollar. So settlement in other currencies that was in dollars and reserve status now in gold that used to be in treasuries. This is happening all over the BRICS, everywhere. And the deeper you look, the more you see it. But, you know, we've talked about the fact, and Sergei Glazyev told us 3 years ago, that there would be a basket of commodities and a basket of local currencies, those involved. And this was an article that came out in TASS, and it was by a man named Yuri Ushakov. And he says everything that we've already known, that the idea of the currency is there'll be two baskets, one basket of national currencies, the second basket are commodities, primarily gold. We've known that. Why else would gold be reclassified tier one Why else are the central banks buying the crap out of it and repatriating it? We've known all of that. He also said it will be a digital form, which means it can be used without the banking system. We've known that too. Think Project Enbridge, which we just saw the first ever cross-border gold transaction using Project Enbridge. It allows these countries to trade with one another in local digital currencies, sidestepping SWIFT. We've known all of that. None of that is new. But here's the crazy part, all right? And this is the part that I think people really need to understand. When they always say Chinese think in terms of decades, we think in terms of minutes and hours. Listen to this. He says the second part is price. He says, for the moment, price is determined by Western speculation. We produce these commodities, we consume them, but we do not have our own price mechanism, which will balance supply and demand. During the COVID panic, the price of oil fell to nearly zero. Now, we know it actually went to negative 40, so he's a little off on that, but who cares? Mm-hmm. Here's the cool part. It's impossible to make any strategic planning for economic development if you do not control the prices of basic commodities. Here it is. Price formation with this new currency will get rid of Western exchanges of commodities. So you hear what the head of the Shanghai Gold Exchange said a decade ago. When we have the right to really speak at the international table, the real price of gold will be known. And here they're telling you, we know what you're doing by suppressing the price, but we're going to use it against you like jiu-jitsu. We're going to use your leverage against you. We're going to do exchange for physical. We're going to drain the COMEX. We're going to take metal out of the ETFs. We're going to buy everything that's not nailed down. We're going to import 400 million ounces of silver. We're going to do all this stuff until no one is naive enough. No one is stupid enough to trust the Western paper price. And they know this. And they are using it against us. And when you hear someone come out and, you know, in the Kremlin come out and say this, everything to me becomes crystal clear. And I just think people need to understand that when the COMEX was designed and they were able to suppress these prices where people actually pretend to pay for it by just having money in a margin account. They don't even really pay anything for the gold that they control, long as they have money in the margin account. And we pretend to give it to you because it's rehypothecated so much. Well, China and India and Russia, these countries were not wealthy enough, industrialized enough, or sophisticated enough to stand up to us. But now they are. And I think this is just beginning, Andy. I really, truly, truly, truly do. And when you hear them say that our new currency will get rid of the Western exchanges, well, think of the arbitrage we're seeing in China right now, where they turn up the price of gold and silver enough to suck everything over. Mm. And I don't know when that moment is, but I think we are getting closer and closer and closer. And I would argue that the reason the metals are moving is because they have substituted the risk, the confiscation and default risk and sanctioning risk of the West, the treasuries and the dollars, and the lack of prospect of being the petrodollar any longer. And they have switched to local currencies for settlement and to gold and oil and silver to be used as wealth. It's being remonetized. It's being used instead of the treasury. And I think it's just beginning. I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, the first thing I should do would say is what you've just said should be listened to twice. People should replay what you've just said. That came out beautifully. You encapsulated so much stuff there. It's in fact, that is a complete education lesson for anyone to listen to. Anyone, whether you know the market or not, it's encapsulated. Thank you for that. And yes, you are so correct. And I think you've covered so much stuff there. But as far as China's concerned, you're absolutely right. And you've referred to the NSFR standards for gold. You've talked about gold then competing with U.S. treasuries. Of course, where's the competition? One's backed by nothing. One's backed physically. Every bar you hold in your hand, that's what you must see this every day. You hold a bar. All the energy that was ever put into it is there in your hand. It owns nothing to anyone else. It cannot be screwed with. So now you're talking about China. My God, you're talking about Russia and China. First of all, we do have, and I know I'm going to be proved right. I just know it because the people that have fed this information to us and are so well connected to it, for 2 months now, Glazhnev's second basket, not so much the SDR-like basket, has not had, was it just green-lighted? It's been made clear that it was green-lighted. it's also been beta tested for 2 months now. When it comes, when we come into the Kazan meeting in on the 10th, sorry, on the 14th or the 19th of May next month, it's going to be more on the table than anyone thinks. But everyone's saying, oh, no, no, it's nothing. The de-dollarization aspect of having that, a gold-backed, commodity gold-backed iron, even grain, gold, all of the, possibly even silver. So you've got this currency. I mean, this is, if you just dealt with purely the energy trade, the and the oil trade, that's a multi-trillion, hundreds of trillions of dollars a year. So, and considering that these, that BRICS side of the world either consumes or produces this stuff, why would this not be the biggest de-dollarization curveball to hit whatever, all the mainstream media, it's years away. Don't think so. And China in particular, I know de Gelen just went over to China, probably walking a tightrope on if they dumped their 3.25 trillion of treasuries, America would be finished overnight. So that's a financial nuclear weapon right there. But it's the other part. This is the part which is, all of this leads to. The fact is, you've got a first-tier asset. It is being now adopted by central banks all over the world in lieu of treasuries. And so now you've got, it's actually mind-blowing to me. Setzer, the ex-treasury secretary, on Bloomberg, it's, they've buried this report. I published it not that long ago. And he basically said, oh, the 3.25 trillion of foreign FX reserves that China holds is only 50% of what they really own. There's over 3 trillion of shadow banking reserves. What we're seeing now and what we actually believe is going on and really believe it is that if you are now running into conflicts with the US on the South China Seas, you're looking at, you're sanctioning US companies now who are providing weapons to Taiwan. Things are moving to a head. You know what's going to happen when you are sanctioned. What happened to Russia will happen to you. You need to get rid of these US dollar reserves. We believe because gold is a first-tier asset class and because it is being exchanged, this is what's happening. I believe these shadow banking reserves are buying monetary gold, which you cannot report. You don't report. And they are loading the boat and moving quickly to this crescendo. And I think, Andy, I think we're at the point here. I actually think within this second quarter, we're going to see something major blow up here. And things are getting pretty tense out there. But I'll shut up now. But, I mean, basically, I think that China has moved to fully start to protect themselves from what is going to happen. They're going to be sanctioned.
I agree. And in a way to do that, you know, a lot of what started me really down this path was first the tier one revision of gold, and then second the significance of the Belt Road Initiative. And if you study much about the Belt Road, it really dovetails like a hand in glove into Belt Road or into the BRICS rather. And, you know, because of the infrastructure that is being set up, whether you're talking about everything that we mentioned already with GDP and military might and human population and natural resources and all of those things, but they've also done an amazing job in infrastructure in terms of roads and bridges and maritime channels and ways of industrializing parts of the world that never were industrialized and doing it in a mutually cooperative way. And again, we talk about settlement, not in the dollar. When you talk about hundreds of trillions of dollars in settlement in other currencies, you know, like I said, Brazil is now, you know, China just canceled huge grain contracts with Australia and the United States, and they're buying them from Russia and paying for it in yuan, which is convertible into gold, which is what the tier one asset, and China, and Brazil selling corn and soybeans to China, you know, for yuan, which is convertible into gold, and all of these trades where even, you know, China won a huge contract with Iran to modernize their biggest airport. They're paying for it in oil. All of these things used to settle in dollars. So listen to this regarding the Belt Road Initiative. The Chinese government has just launched a new public blockchain infrastructure platform led by the Conflux Network. The new platform, dubbed Ultra Large Scale Blockchain Infrastructure Platform for the Belt Road Initiative. And the main focus of the project is to create a public blockchain infrastructure platform that will be able to support the implementation of cross-border cooperation projects along the Belt Road Initiative. You're talking 75% of human population, 50% of global GDP just in the Belt Road, and all of the OPEC countries, every one of them on the Belt Road. So you put the OPEC countries on the Belt Road, you got the Belt Road, you got the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is the largest regional and financial and military organization on the planet, along with the BRICS and the Eurasian Economic Union. They're all the same countries. In fact, the president of Belarus has called for a summit to bring the SCO and the Eurasian Economic Union into the BRICS. I've been saying that for years. It will happen. It's the same countries. You're talking almost 90% of human population and the majority of all the commodities. And now you have not only the majority of all the shipping lanes and all of these new north-south corridor and east-west, all of these corridors that are proprietary, that will only be patrolled by military and commerce, where the U.S. Navy doesn't have access to a lot of this. And now you have a payment system using like the Project Mbridge or this new blockchain for all of these countries, 75% of human population, as is right now, to trade outside the dollar. And that's why I'm very fond of this phrase, little by little, then all at once, logarithmic decay. You know, people are always blowing off and naysaying and poo-pooing and ignoring the little by little because it takes so long. And not only that, our media does no job of telling us it takes so long, but then they're blown away by the all at once, how fast it happens. But if you take a step back and look at the changes we've seen in the way that the United States is viewed globally, in the way that the dollar is now lacking in settlement for so many forms of commodities globally, the way that all of these exchanges and infrastructures and you know, whether it be, you know, geographic infrastructures or monetary infrastructures are being set up, that when they flip the switch, the all at once will catch the world by surprise in a massive, massive way. And, you know, like I said, Richard Russell always said they have to inflate or die. He said this 20 years ago. I've always said, well, find a villain. When you have Janet Yellen going around the world saying, we're going to sanction you, and you, yet we're able to do this stuff, or we can invade Iraq 20 years ago, still occupy their country, still sanction 14 of their banks, destroy their country, you know, bring in a new regime, and yet we're still there and controlling their oil revenue, where they, you know, they made $95 billion in oil revenue last year, and a few months ago asked for $1 billion. We said it's not a good time. So they're kicking coalition forces out of the country. They are making trading in dollars illegal. If you own a business and do so, you'll go to jail. And they just formally applied to the BRICS. So the world looks at us as being hypocritical as hell, but yet we can say, you can do this. We can do this, but you can't. And this is all happening as they're building infrastructures and alliances. And, you know, people say, who will trust China? Who will trust Russia? Who the hell's going to trust the U.S. anymore? Mm-hmm. And that's where gold and a marriage, perhaps, of blockchain technology, like they're talking about here, where you have immutability and veracity shown of what is on the ledger and who is behind it. And you have it audited and you have a system that inspires trust. Rather than, you know, and in a cooperative manner, mind you. I'm not saying the Chinese or the Belt Road or the BRICS are perfect, but nor are we any longer. And then when you look what's happened to the country, you know, I would say if it was just this, we'd be all right. But look what's happened to the United States, where you question the authenticity of the electoral system, of the judicial system. You have open borders where 12 million people have entered illegally, where you have lawlessness and homelessness in the cities to epidemic proportions. where you have wokeness, where you don't respect authority, where you don't respect your teachers and your parents, and you're hired in government and in on Wall Street not based upon merit but based upon, you know, your gender or your sex or, you know, all of these things, people look at this country like, what the hell's happened? And then we have massive runaway inflation. We have a bond market that is, for the first time in 45 years, more volatile than the price of gold. All of these things coming together at once. Andrew, I really do believe, honest to God, we are at the foothills of a once-in-a-generational move. And either you see it for what it is or you don't. And I believe it's too stupid to be stupid. It's intended. There, if you wanted to be the world, and by the way, let's not forget Jared Bernstein, the lead economic advisor of the United States government. Google Jared Bernstein dethroned King Dollar. This is a man who's written reports on the U.S. dollar world reserve currency is a privilege we can no longer afford. We should shed it. Well, let's weaponize the dollar. Let's sign an executive order to go green, which is the linchpin of the hegemony. We'll weaponize the dollar, making everyone in the Southern Hemisphere never trust us again. We'll destabilize the crap out of our country, create massive divisiveness. We're not united anymore. We're black, white, red, blue, rich, poor, immigrant, non, you name it. We let 12 million people here in illegally. We're already insolvent in terms of our debt to GDP. We're broke. Who's going to pay for these people? How about if 1% of them want to do something dangerous to the United States? Yesterday on the news, there are groups of people saying death to the United States, in the United States, having meetings, chanting death to the U.S., death to the U.S. I mean, and we let these people in and we think that's okay. I think people look at the United States, what once was considered a beacon of hope and liberty and freedom and justice, where people sail across an ocean on inner tubes tied together with strings or walk from Central America across the border, not in droves of millions, but onesie twosie to find a better life. And they get here and this is what they see. I played golf yesterday with a man who was from Morocco. And he said, I didn't move here for this shit. Mm. He said, when I came here in 2005, it was an amazing place. And now I look around me and I wonder where the hell I am. I want to leave. And this, I'm dead serious. So you ask yourself, if being the world reserve currency was really important to us, would we have ever weaponized the dollar? Would we have ever signed an executive order to go green? Would we have ever made the world question our electoral and judicial system? Would we have ever had open borders? Would we have ever created more money in 4 years than in the history of the country preceding it while squashing interest rates to create massive distortions in all of our asset prices? Would we be so wholly hypocritical going around the globe and sanctioning all of these countries for doing things arguably, by their own estimation, far less egregious than what we do? And you put it together and you say, are our politicians that stupid or are what they doing? Is it just too stupid to be stupid? Could it really be intended? Because either you fall on the sword and default, or sorry, our brain-dead monetary and fiscal policy did this. Do you inflate the way that all politicians have done, which lead to the same end road? Or do you have option three, and that is to find a villain? And it was those sons of bitches, Xi Jinping and Putin and OPEC. How could they do this to us? How could they dump the dollar? Because the synthetic demand for the dollar that has been created for over 50 years, where every country in the world has had to stockpile it in order to buy oil, like that goes away.
Yeah.
You know, the United Arab Emirates just said, we don't want to take dollars for oil anymore. Iran and Russia aren't. What happens when Saudi and the rest of OPEC says, hey, you guys, listen, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia just said China's our most important trading partner this year and for the next 50. Those words were used and thought about specifically. It was 50 years ago that we signed the petro deal with Saudi Arabia. So is it that far out of the reach of imagination in a country that has weaponized the dollar, that is choosing inflation over austerity, that has let their bond market go nuts and has lost and whitewashed its identity and culture of what we once stood for them to say, hey, guys, you know, you're going green and everything. And thanks for the memories. We found safety in numbers with the BRICS and the Belt Road and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Heck, it's the majority of human population. And guess what? They're not going green. Thanks for the memories. And bang, we're no longer taking dollars for oil anymore. What happens then? And it's the same argument I've been saying for 3-4 years, and I don't care if I'm redundant. What continues to happen to support this ideology, you can't make up. And I think people need to understand that it's like we're going down the river, and the falls are up ahead. That all at once once moment is coming. And the naysayers and the dollar bulls and the people who are just, you know, recency biased, I guess, individuals will not see this for what it is. But I will tell you, in my entire career, 34 years, I have never been more convinced that this is the ultimate fate of the United States. We're too far down the rabbit hole. So when I beg people to own precious metals, and you do too, for me, it is not about becoming wealthy. It is wealth that has outlived everything the world has ever thrown at it, everything, including world wars and hyperinflation and Great Depression and pandemics. And what we have coming this way will make all of that look pale in comparison from a monetary perspective. So, I mean, I love you for letting me ramble. I love you for letting me say this stuff to an audience also, not just you're very famous here in the United States, but I know you have exposure around the world. And I hope people can hear this coming from someone who was the least likely person to have ever succeeded, and the opportunities that I were given in this country, which I thank God every day for the United States. It breaks my heart. It saddens me to no degree to know I have three kids growing up in an environment that you could argue I've seen the best of times, and maybe my parents before me, because where we are right now, I think there are some big bar tabs that need to be paid, if you will.
And I think, again, I want people to play this back twice. You've encapsulated everything, pretty much everything. You've distilled it down to something that's imminent. It's about to happen. You've also put in there, you need to protect your wealth. It's not about making money. This is about now. Precious metals is your only refuge, because you need. So basically, what's going to happen now is, and obviously we can now see, in fact, the mainstream media, they report, I don't understand, must be central banks buying, I don't understand, but hang on, but there's not enough volume going through the LBMA to warrant such a rally. What's going on? Well, hey, it's exactly what we're just saying. It is monetary gold being first-tier assets, being converted into monetary role, swapping your dollars, your pounds, your euros for physical gold, and you settle them outside of the ring fence. That's what's happening. This is a trajectory that won't stop. It is, as you've just outlined, not on this particular rant, the one before. It is absolutely being targeted. This is a target of what the game has become so obvious. It's ridiculous. Sometimes we used to pull our hair out. We go, I can't, everyone must see this. I mean, like, for example, that silly little event on Friday, when the very second, the very millisecond that London went home, Europe went home, Asia was already absent. What happens? They take back $2 in silver, and they take back 86 bucks in gold. Oh, just to the exact tick where the COT cutoff was last time, to the tick. Now, obviously not a coincidence. And so then you get the CTAs, these dumb guys who we talk about, the useful fools that we call them. And they go, oh, well, clearly there's a top being carved here. Let's believe the narrative that there's a gold correction app. So they all not just sell, they go short. And then what happens is immediately it gets bought. And who's buying it? Nothing. No one in the West is buying it. And it's all going. So thank you very much, ma'am. It's off. And it's off it goes. So again, we've reached a point where an inflection point. This is history in the making. I think what you're saying, what we're trying to say here is, look, this is just about education. This is about taking responsibility for yourself and your family, listening to this information, take it or leave it, but vend it into all of the things that you see. If it makes a difference, if it adds up to you, then do something about it. Because what we're talking about here is happening. You need to do something about it. And I don't see any other thing that you can do, because clearly you need wealth. You need some form of wealth to be able to keep going, because they're draining it. And if you're in pounds, dollars, euros, or any other debasing currency, well, you're sure as hell not making, you're sure as hell going to get run over. So do what the central banks, do exactly what the central banks are doing. Do exactly what the BRICS guys are doing. Just emulate them. Literally buy physical gold, physical silver, none of your paper derivatives, because they're all going to go to crap, and literally do what they're doing, emulate them, and enjoy the ride, because you will protect yourself. And Andy, I really thank you. I mean, for coming here today, this is really unusual stuff. It is rare that a guest can come along. It is years of experience. This is an algorithm that has entered your head over the years, and you just see it. You just see it. And a lot of the younger people coming up just want to need to know. How would you possibly know all of these things? There they are. And this is really valuable information. I really ask people, please listen to this more than once. It is your lifeline out of what is definitely a crash. I mean, yes, we may end up with a war. Who knows what these terrible people might try and do. One way or the other, you need to protect yourself. And if you've got some silver coins, you've got some gold coins, some bars, then you will have something to exchange, to barter for goods, and at the very least. And it's coming to that.
Well, the pleasure is mine, Andy, and I'd love to come back anytime you'll have me. Like I said, I follow you from across the pond, just about everything that you put out. And it's a labor of love. This is something that I believe in very, very strongly, and I'm scared by. You know, I mean, first time in my career, in my life, that I'm concerned for this country and where we're ultimately heading. And, you know, if I can wake up one or two people, that's great. And hopefully have an impact on a few people. And then they do some due diligence and check all this stuff out, fact check it. I spend a lot of time, and I know you do too, making sure that what we talk about is factual. So In any case, the honor is mine, and I hope to do it again soon. And I wish you and everyone else out there all the best, and certainly look forward to picking up where we left off, hopefully not too far down the road, my friend.
Yeah, and bless you, Andy, for joining us today. And I will ask, please put some links in. I think people can contact you directly. They can contact you at Miles Frankton. They can, and you're doing a lot of. You're actually now. I know that you're suddenly on the circuit here because what you're having to say here has to be heard. This is a foghorn. It should be heard. And we don't have really. This is not scaremongering. There's very little time to actually to assimilate this information and put it into action. So, guys, you know, thank you so much for joining us all here today. And thank you, Andy, for making this a very special episode.
Pleasure is mine, brother. Look forward to doing it again.
Well, that was fantastic. Thank you to Andy and Andy for giving us that update. Wow, a lot going on in the world. So be sure to tune in next week for your next edition of Live from the Vault, your best source of information on the gold and silver markets and where they may be headed from here. Make sure you subscribe to whichever channel you're watching so that you're notified when the next edition hits. And hopefully Shane Moran will be back in this chair next week for your next edition of Live from the Vault.